And so here this morning, we're going to dive back into where we were last week. So we started last week with the idea of, can Christmas change the world? We asked a question, and from this point forward, we'll be dealing with the answer there, that Christmas can change the world. We saw that last week in the shepherds and the wise men and the angels, as they all worship fully. You know, that looked different for everybody, didn't it? You know, I bet your worship looks different than the person sitting beside you this morning. I bet the way that you sang, what was going on in your heart, it's different, okay? How we go throughout our week in worship is different. And so your personal worship looks different than mine. It was the same way for these shepherds, for these wise men, and for all heaven as they celebrated the coming of the Messiah there. But the idea here behind this Advent conspiracy, it has really four tenets or four themes. And last week's theme was worship fully. This week we're going to talk about spending less and what that really is about. Next week is about giving more. And then our final week will be about loving all there in our communion Sunday. It'll be about loving like Jesus, okay? And so we'll be pressing into those themes here throughout the week. But the goal of this is to kind of reject the idea of an American cultural Christmas, not in the sense that we don't buy gifts or don't put up trees or things of that nature, but that it doesn't dominate what the season is about. And so sometimes our feel-good is all the excitement of the presents and of getting together with family. You know, we've experienced that because what happens the day after Christmas? It's gone, okay? So if my joy was in the presents or if my joy was in my family who was coming or getting together, when that all goes away, if my joy goes away with it, then it helps me see that maybe my joy was not in the right spot altogether. Right? It's not that we can't enjoy one another. It's just that Christmas has come and it's changed the world many years ago and it's still changing the world. And so the joy should always be there present. And so for today, anyway, we're going to press in this way of spending less. And so in a real general way, what does spending less sound like to you? This is not deep at all here, okay? Don't go shopping, okay? Maybe that's how we could term it. Anybody else? Everybody's getting Dollar Tree stuff this year, huh? Yeah. Spend less. Anybody else spending less here? What's it mean to you? What do you think of when you think of those terms? Nobody? All right, so there's definitely a financial aspect to this, okay? And typically we buy gifts, and I'm just going to speak for me. We'll buy some gifts sometimes that really don't matter a whole lot. You ever do that? You know, it's just to kind of build the setting there, you know? So instead of having five gifts, now there's 10. And the other five, they'll never remember what they are, but you just bought it because it's like Christmas. And, you know, people tend to be a little bit more generous or open with their pocketbooks this time of year, you know? So typically we would say, no, we're not going to get that. But now we'll say, well, since it's Christmas, you know, we'll do this one time. Since it's Christmas, we'll go ahead and do this one time. So there's the obvious application here of really being intentional on how we're spending money, okay? We're not going to talk so much about that today. I think that's pretty straightforward. And there'll be a purpose in that as well, all right? Spending should be intentional. As we get into giving more and loving all, that'll make a little bit more sense. But today we want to focus on what our spending actually reveals about ourselves. And so if Christmas is going to change the world, where does it start? Where must it start? It's got to start with me, okay? So for me to preach this and not live this is just dumb. And for us to talk about this and look at it biblically speaking and say that's right and walk out of here and live different, it's just as absurd, right? And so we want this story, not just the story, but the purpose behind all this to be renewed in us and to be refreshed and revived. And this is just one of my favorite stories, and I don't know why. The birth of Jesus, there's all sorts of good ones, but this one here just really, I don't know, it just settles in on me when I'll think about it and dwell there. And man, it really just kind of ushers in Advent, what the season's really all about. So we're going to spend time there today looking at the idea of Christmas changing our world as we think about what our spending reveals. And so to head that way, let's talk about this. Let's say that somebody who had never experienced Christmas ever, who had never heard the Christmas story, was going to follow us for the next 3 weeks. And they're going to follow us everywhere. So they're going to come with us here. They're going to go with us home, to whatever parties or events that we have going, to shopping malls. They're going to experience what life would be like in our home. So is your home ever different than what it is here? I mean, are you ever like stress-free here and you get home and it's like high level? You know, you're trying to manage that. You know, everything's perfect here and we love Jesus and everything's just glorious. When we get home, it's like, rah! All right, so everybody has those kind of moments in your life, right? And so here what we're trying to deal with, though, is really understanding what it looks like to have somebody be a part of our life who doesn't know anything about us or about Christmas. What would their takeaway be? So when they experience our high level of tension, our stress, our worry about finances, our worry about getting the right gift, our worry about not having enough time, our frustration, when they experience all of that and our time here together, what would be their takeaway? You know, if we were to ask them a couple weeks from today, 6, 13, 20, 3 weeks from today, to write down what Christmas is about, what would they write? And would it be the cultural narrative, which is about all the decor and all of the tradition and all of the food and about the presents? Or would the dominant theme be Jesus? And would they walk away with just this clear picture that these people really believe that a Messiah came and their life is different because of him? Yeah, maybe they participate in other things, and I'm not asking you to all not to participate in other things. I mean, just look around. We participate. But it's about being intentional in how we participate, not letting the second-tier items become maybe the first-tier or most important. So what would their narrative be? Today we're going to look at the meta-narrative. What is the main story, the big picture of Christmas? And so Matthew 6 is where we're going to be. If you'd like to go ahead and turn there. This is not necessarily part of the Christmas story, but it definitely ties into what we're talking about here. And when we think about the birth of Jesus and why he came, how he came, this will hopefully connect with where we're going here this morning. So Matthew chapter 6, we've got Jesus with his disciples, and he's doing quite a bit of teaching here. And we're going to hit him up right in the middle of this teaching. But he's talking initially about having the right attitude towards those who are in need. So when you get to the beginning of Matthew, there are people who are needy, and it is a Christian's role to meet those needs, to love those people, to be generous towards people who have needs. It's not necessarily an interview process. You know, do you meet the criteria for me to give you my $5? It's, hey, you have a need, and hey, I have money, and so I'm going to help you, and I'm going to do this in Jesus' name because he loves you, right? And so sometimes we muddy up the waters with our own prejudice or personal opinion. You're just going to go blow this. No, I'm going to love you the way that Jesus has loved me. You ever blown the grace of Christ? You ever taken that for granted? Man, what if Jesus held that perspective towards us? You know, I know you're just going to go sin, so I'm not giving you any more grace. We'd be in a world of hurt, wouldn't we? So somebody that's really needy, for us to look at them and go, I'm not going to help you because you're just going to go blow it, misses the real message and story of Christmas. And so we want to be helping those who are in need, being generous there, but doing it in such a way where people don't know. I'm reminded of a guy in my home church growing up. Every January, he'd stand up and he'd give thanks to God for allowing him to be able to give money to the church, which is okay. But then he'd go on and outline how much he gave, why they gave it, you know, what it went towards, and how, you know, if they hadn't have given it, we wouldn't have been able to do this. And as a kid, I didn't think much about it. But looking back now, I'm like, man, you're just tooting your own horn, right? I mean, look at me. You know, put the spotlight on me. And so maybe his heart wasn't there, but I think there's a better way to go about that. You know, Jesus says, don't let your left hand know what your right hand's doing. And here, when he's talking about giving to the needy, he's saying that same thing. Okay, so we don't announce it. We don't come in and say, this is what I did. You know, look at me. We're just to do so. We're to do it in the name and love that's been given towards us here. And so you got that going on. You've got Jesus talking about praying and how to pray. Matthew 6, you'll see the model prayer there. His disciples said, teach us how to pray. And so he's walking them through what that looks like. He teaches them about fasting. And also, fasting is just like giving. You know, it shouldn't be something that we pronounce. You know, so post on Facebook, you know, today's my fasting day. Nobody needs to know that, okay? Or walk around like, I'm so hungry. You're just begging the question. Well, why are you so hungry? Well, because I love the Lord and I'm fasting today. Now, Jesus says here, don't let your face be downcast. You know, dress it up. Make it look right so people have no idea that you're submitting yourself to me, that you're giving up something so that you can dedicate more of yourself or search more assertive, be more assertive after maybe what it is that I have for your life here. And so those are kind of the two or three things prior to where we're heading today. Don't look for the applause of people. And here we're going to see it as it relates to money, in particular the area of spending. So Matthew 6, 19 through verse 24 is where we're going to go here. This is a familiar text, but we'll look at it today in light of this Advent conspiracy. So verse 19 says, "Do not lay up for yourself treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal." So is there treasure in heaven? There is, okay? And is it better than the treasure here? Absolutely, okay? Nothing's going to happen to it. Nobody can take it. And who does he say to lay it up for? Do not lay up for whom? For yourself, okay? So here we've got a way of storing it up. It's about us there, okay? Not so much about us here. So don't put it here. Don't invest it here in such a way that it becomes your God. Rather, put it somewhere where it will last forever, where it will be your reward forever. Verse 21, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The lamp of the body is the eye, and if therefore your eye is good, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be full of darkness. And so if therefore the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness? No one can serve two masters, for either will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon." And that word mammon is a pretty broad word, but it really encompasses the idea of wealth or riches, which should come in all sorts of ways. And so back in the day, for some people, their wealth was displayed in how they dressed. For others, it was displayed in their land or in their livestock. There's all sorts of different ways to summarize mammon, but it's anything other than God that you can treat as your wealth or you could treat as your God. And so a few things here we want to highlight from Jesus about how it relates to spending. So how many of you have already spent something for Christmas? All right, so most of us have. So how many of you will be returning something after this message today? Yeah, hopefully not. That's not the goal here, all right? But we are trying to be intentional in what we spend. We don't want to just waste stuff for the sense of this, our country's cultural experience or Christmas holiday experience. And so what does our spending reveal? A few things we're going to note as it relates to us personally, and maybe some things that we can see about ourselves as it relates to our spending. So number one is this. In our spending, we reveal, first of all, what we treasure the most. In our spending, we're going to reveal what we treasure the most. My uncle used to say, show me your checkbook, and I'll show you what you love. Right? Show me your checkbook, or maybe today it's show me your debit card statement, whatever, your bank statement, and I'll show you the things that you really love, because you invest in the things you love. You give towards that freely. It doesn't really take much effort or much prodding or somebody trying to compel you to give, because it's something that you love. There's another expression that goes like this: we put our money where our mouth is. And so we're going to spend money. Some of us have admitted we already have. We have as well. We're going to spend money on this Christmas season. And what that's going to reveal is, what do we treasure most? What do we love the most? What is our highest priority as it relates to our spending? And so let me ask you a question. Do you think the way that you spend your money says anything about your heart? Or do you think those are two separate things? Can I spend money and it not have anything to do with God? I can, right? I think what was said was I shouldn't, but I can. And so can I spend less this holiday season and still not honor God? Absolutely. So it's not just about money. I can spend more and I can give more glory and honor to God. So it's not just about the bottom line or the financial part of this. It definitely is included, but what we're looking at is the heart of the issue here. And so here what Jesus is teaching is, in our treasuring, what we reveal, or in our spending, what we reveal, rather, is what we treasure or what we love the most. And so let's go back and listen to how he frames this. Okay, verse 19 again, he says, "Do not store up for yourself treasures on earth, where moths and vermin destroy, where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourself treasures in heaven, where moths and vermin," vermin is also a word, rust can have the idea of something within, bringing it out. It's the idea of destruction, Same thing with the moth, same thing here with vermin. Do not destroy, and where thieves do not break in and steal, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And so Jesus here makes a clear connection between what we are spending, what we're investing in, and what we love the most. Now, let's just be clear. Does this mean spend nothing? No, is the goal of this to spend nothing? No, we see our Father, last week we said, is a Father who delights in giving good gifts. And so we learn what it is to give gifts. Sometimes we get that a little twisted maybe when we think of the Christmas story, since the wise men brought gifts to Jesus, then we're going to bring gifts to our kids. Is that how it works? No, all right? Sometimes we try to justify overspending in ways like that. I think Jesus' birthday is one of the birthdays where more people than him get gifts than the birthday boy, right? We celebrate everybody else having a great time, and it's like, oh, and thank you, Jesus, for our great gifts, right? It's your birthday. It's the one we should be celebrating. And so $450 billion was the number we said last week that Americans will spend on Christmas this year. And so are we spending in ways that are intentional? Are we spending in ways that reveal that there are things that matter, that we treasure? Or are we spending in ways that reveal maybe we're just a little bit more closely connected to this world than we would like to be? And so Jesus is not saying don't spend. He's just saying don't let these things you spend on be your treasure. Don't let these things that you get be what matters most to you. Don't let them be your highest value or where you find maybe your self-worth or things that should, by world standard, to define you. So you know this. The goal of living here is not to acquire as much stuff as possible, right? The goal is to use what we've been given here to invest in things that will last forever. And so when we store it up in eternal things, we're storing it up for ourselves. And so Jesus says, in your spending here, in what you're investing in, you're revealing what you treasure. All right? So it's this personal evaluation of what I love the most. Jesus had a half-brother, James, and James writes about this. He kind of gives us a picture of people who had great wealth, and it's similar probably to you and I here today. Great wealth, and yet they squandered it on themselves, and ultimately it causes some real havoc here. And so let's read this. James 5, verses 1 through 5 begins, "Now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that is coming on you. Your wealth has rotted, and moths have eaten your clothes." Does that sound familiar? What did Jesus say? Don't store your treasure up in things that can rot or can rust or can be destroyed by moths. And so here's people who actually did that, and now it's happened to them. "Your wealth is rotted, moths have eaten your clothes." Verse 3, "Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You've hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty." And then verse 5, probably a little more particular to us. It says, "You have lived on earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter." And so here we find these rich people that James is addressing in the same way of thinking that Jesus was teaching, right? And they are the literal living out of what Jesus says will happen if you invest your wealth in worldly treasure here. That's why he says don't store it up here. Isaiah makes a similar comparison in Isaiah 55, verse 2. He says, "Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy?" So what's the answer to that question? Why spend money on things that cannot satisfy us? Why invest so much in things that are just going to break or they're going to be eaten by moths or they can be destroyed or they can be ruined by fire or by flood? Why do we invest so much there? The implication here is don't do that. Buy from me. That verse goes on to say, verse 2, "Eat from me and you'll delight in the richest of fare." You'll delight in the richest of fare. And so it's important here when we think about our spending this time of year, it's not just plastic, it's not just cash, it's a revelation. And it's revealing what our hearts treasure the most. You ever feel like if you don't spend enough, people aren't going to think you love them? Or if I don't spend enough, they're not going to understand, maybe they're going to miss out on the Christmas experience. You ever feel like the Christmas story in and of itself is not enough? And what if we withdrew all the gifts? What if we withdrew all the decorations and the Christmas programs and all the secular Christmas songs that we all like? What if all of that was just withdrawn and all we had was the narrative of the coming of Jesus? Would it still be a time of celebration? I mean, I would hope so for the church. You know, I wouldn't think so for probably Walmart or any of these big stores. You know, Black Friday wouldn't matter. It would just be another day, you know, the day after Thanksgiving. We wouldn't have any big push to shop or whatever. So there's more to it. And really here, for me, just trying to connect with Advent Conspiracy here initially, this was the one that I probably struggled with the most. Can I spend less and Christmas still be Christmas? And is my spending revealing that what I really treasure the most has been the coming of this Messiah and how he has changed my world? Or does my spending reveal that just the stuff on this planet matters the most? Right? Maybe that's a question you'll have to wrestle with. Maybe you won't. Maybe you've already got this all figured out. So it really seems like common sense. Don't spend money on things that can't satisfy you, and yet we do it all the time. Right? Looking for that next best thing. We've said it before. That's why we have, you know, 6 different phones in our toy boxes, cell phones, that we thought were just the latest craze and the coolest thing back in the day, and now they're like, we thought these were awesome. These look ridiculous. Same thing with clothes. You know, we buy these clothes, we think we've got to have them, and they start to wear out, and we buy another, and we buy another, and we buy another. I had a friend who confessed to me one day, he had like 58, 59 polo shirts. I'm not going to call his name. You may or may not know him, but he said, please don't tell anybody I have that many shirts. Because he ended up taking a bunch from the Goodwill because he just felt so convicted about his investment in stuff that didn't matter. You can spend $50 on a shirt and you can't spend $50 on a family who has a great need, or you can't help them out. And so it's about priorities, things that matter the most. And here we're seeing spending less initially is going to address my heart, and it may not be pretty what we find. All right, secondly, in our spending, not only is our heart revealed what we treasure the most, but now we're going to see what our spiritual health is. You ever take a spiritual health inventory? Now, this is a good time of year to kind of reflect back over your year and think about how you've walked with the Lord. Think about some of the prayers that you've prayed, maybe some of the answers that He's given, maybe some of the ways you've grown, some of the challenges you've faced. It's a good time just to take a spiritual inventory. Am I walking close with the Lord? Am I desiring His plan? Am I really pushing after just living out His mission with my life or with our family or with our church? Or have I maybe been seduced by the hustle of just got to get done what I got to get done, and I've got to have certain things I need to acquire? It's a good time to do a spiritual health inventory. So in our morning lessons here, we were talking a little bit about compartmentalization, about where we put certain things in certain boxes. And maybe you don't do this, but for me, this is kind of a battle in my own life as well. Like sometimes we put work in a work box, and the only thing that deals with the work box is things that's work-related. That's why people say don't take your work home, because it's in the work box. It's the only thing you do at work is work stuff. The only thing at home is home stuff. And so there you've got your family, and you've got your children, you've got your grandchildren, you've got your spouses, you've got your parents, you've got your siblings. The only thing we do here is family stuff. Well, sometimes we've got our family box, our work box, our school box, our hobby box, and then we've got our God box. And we call that kind of like a Sunday, or we call it our quiet time. And I've got my, those moments, they fit in my God box, but they're not supposed to branch out and touch or influence or work with any other boxes. Does that sound right? All right, it may be true, but it doesn't sound right. That's not how it should be. In our morning studies, we were looking at how there the Corinthians were looking at their God boxes. What do we call those God boxes? Temples, right? Synagogues, mosques, places where God dwelt. I don't, maybe you didn't address this in your study. In ours, we did. Like, do you remember being told you can't run in the church because it's God's house? All right? And it's kind of like this fear, you know, like, where is he? Like, you know, he's going to pop out of the dark hallway or come out of the baptistry and we're busted. And so you're like, this is really God's house. And so for a long time, that just didn't make sense to me. I understand the idea of being reverent, having respect for God. God doesn't live here. Does he? No. This is a building. It's been dedicated to the service of the Lord. Absolutely. But he doesn't live here. Remember, the New Testament says he doesn't dwell in buildings made with men's hands. And so now we're the temple. And yet in this day, people are walking by God boxes like they're just highly revered. And we still do it. And we talk about, look at that beautiful building. And we just think that it's just majestic. And it's God just must really pour himself all over that place. It's just statues and stained glass and screws and concrete and wood. And it's dedicated to the Lord. But it's just compartmentalized thinking to think that God only exists in that little box. And outside of that, he really should not have any influence. This is my work box. God, you stay there. This is my family box. God, you stay there. It's my hobby box. Please don't touch my hobby. This is my Christmas spending box. You know, please don't touch what I've saved for that, Lord. This is, I keep you here and I love you here, but not everywhere else. Sometimes when we do a spiritual health inventory, what we see is that we've put our God, supposedly we think, in his little box. And so God is not to be placed in that little box. He's not just here for these what we would call God things. He's concerned with every area of our life, and that includes our spending. That includes our spending. And this has really kind of wrecked me. Even yesterday, we were out doing a little shopping, and I picked up something, I put it back. And I picked up something, I put it back. And I picked up something, I put it back. I was like, come on, God. I mean, seriously, I'm just getting frustrated. Like, why can't I buy this thing? And it was like, because you don't need it. You don't need it whatsoever. And what you're thinking about, it just doesn't matter. There's a better way for you to spend. Even this morning, I was wrestling, like getting online, trying to order that thing. It's just this, so maybe it's not your struggle. Maybe this is all me, but it was just like, why is that? Why can't I just trust you with this spending? It's kind of like when we came through that Twisted series and we were talking about speeding. I can't go anywhere now. Honestly, I don't think about Miss Debbie. Driving down the interstate, we were talking about speeding in our life group. It's like, when I see my speedometer over it, I'm like, I want to go super fast, but I got to slow down, right? I want to buy this, but my spirit said, no, you can't, right? It's not necessary. You don't need to do that. That's just kind of getting wrapped up in this cultural holiday. You're missing the narrative, the big story of Christmas, Corey, and so I'm thankful for that prodding. Well, let's go back to our text here. Looking at how our spiritual health can be revealed in our spending. Verse 22 and 23, Jesus is going to give an illustration here. All this applies. So verse 19 to 21, you've got Jesus teaching a principle. Where your heart is, there your treasure will be. Or where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Verse 22 and 23, you've got Jesus giving an illustration of that about the eye. Verse 24, then you've got the application of that. So you've got the principle, you've got the illustration, and then you've got the application of what he just taught. And so here's verse 22 and 23. It says, the eye is the lamp of the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body will be full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? And so what is Jesus talking about here? Just right up to that. I mean, has he just changed gears? Is he kind of this schizophrenic rabbit chaser who's just constantly just changing discussions? You're like, oh, Jesus, I can't follow you. I don't know where you're going. No, he was just talking about what we're investing, what we're spending, what we treasure. And so he's illustrating that by talking about eyes. And so understand, this is figurative. He's given us a word picture of what's going on within us when we spend or invest or treasure things that are outside of him. So it's not a lesson about our physical eyes. It's really an illustration about our physical health. And John Wesley said it this way, what the eye is to the body, the intention is to the soul. What the eye is to the body, the intention is to the soul. Therefore, if we say that our eyes are healthy, we're saying that our eyes are focused, our eyes are single, our eyes are just clear. And that's the picture he's painting for us here. And so if my eyes are healthy, then my intentions would be fixed. And my intentions are fixed on God. And so I'm stayed. You ever had blurry vision? You ever tried to walk with blurry vision? You ever tried to walk dizzy? Maybe you played the dizzy bat game or something like that. It's hard, isn't it? I mean, you can't find your way, and you're not real sure where you're going, and you just wish this would all clear up. That's the idea here. It's that we've got double vision or blurred vision. We're just not focused, therefore we're having a hard time walking straight. Where there is clarity of focus, where our eyes are fixed, then we've got these intentions that are healthy, and we've got this God who is praised. So healthy eyes will be connected to healthy hearts, and healthy hearts treasure the things of heaven. Healthy eyes are connected to healthy hearts, and healthy hearts treasure the things of heaven. And so when I think of it that way and I look at something on the shelf, is this really necessary? Am I intentional in what I'm doing, or am I just kind of frivolous? There's a better way to invest often what God has put in our hands, and we'll address that here the next 2 weeks. But before we can start in with how we give, we got to start with ourselves about maybe thinking about the way that we're spending. So when my spending and my investing reflect the ways of God, then I will be revealing that I have healthy eyes. But where my spending and my investing is just for temporary things, what I'm revealing is I've just got that blurred vision. I've got this darkness. I can't see clearly. And Jesus says, man, how great is that darkness? How great is that darkness? So in our spending, one of the things we reveal is our spiritual health. And then third and last here this morning, in our spending, we're going to demonstrate whom we're serving. We're going to demonstrate whom we are serving. And so you say, wait just a minute, all right? How many of you have ever earned a paycheck? So everybody in this room, I mean, some of you've earned something. Maybe it didn't come from an employer. Maybe it came from a parent. They said, if you'll do this job, I'll give you X amount of dollars, you know? So have you ever looked at your money and just said just that? This is my money. This is mine. You've been excited about your money? You've been storing up your money, preparing for what you want to do with your money? All right, I've been the same way. And so here we're looking at Jesus talking about, really, it's about who we're serving. Is it really mine, or is it beyond me? And so I can take the position that says, this is my money, and I'll spend it how I want to. I've worked hard for it. I got the degree. Right, so this should be, I should get some say-so in this. I understand you're God, but I've got needs, I've got wants, I'm only here for a short amount of time, and so I think I should have a little bit of say in how I get to spend what I have earned. And when I have that attitude, what I'm really demonstrating is that I'm using money to really be my God. I'm letting it dictate what I want to do and how I think I should live life. And so Jesus here is teaching, it's not about money being your God. It's about you using your money in service to your God. And so one day here, and it's been many years ago, but it clicked with me. Everything that comes across my hands should just be something that I pray about. God, how do you want me to use this? You ever get a response that you don't like? I was listening to a pastor here a while ago, and he was talking about how he and his wife had saved up to buy carpet for their home. It was like $3,000. And they saved it up, and there was a family in their church who had a great need, and they both felt prodded, like we're supposed to give this money to them. And he said, I just hated it. I love them, but I had plans for my money. But we gave it. He said, we started saving up again, and we hit it. $3,000, and we were going to lay our carpet. And yet again, we get this prodding like, you're supposed to give this and help these other people out. Three times they did that. The fourth time, he said, we finally got carpet. All right? I think they said they kind of quit praying about it because they wanted to lay it as fast as they could. But sometimes we get really attached to our stuff, don't we? Like it's mine. When in reality, it's just money. And I remember my dad saying that often, son, it's only money. You know, and some people say money, and it's just like, their eyes like, money? Man, I need more of that. If I have more of that, then I can get more of this. And I have more of that, then people think more of me. And it's just like this ongoing, never-ending cycle where we're never fully satisfied. I was reading after a man here this week who said, everything we buy on this planet should be stamped with a stamp that says, dissatisfaction guaranteed. Your car, your marriage, your kids, your job, your clothes, everything on it should come with dissatisfaction guaranteed. And I still don't know if we'd buy it. Well, we'd buy it. I'm just saying, I don't know if we'd buy that it really is guaranteeing that we'll be dissatisfied. Sometimes we demonstrate who we're serving by how we approach our spending. And so I put God in my box. God, I got this car, and I'm getting this car. Everything else you want to do, go ahead. Or God, I've got this toy. I've got this new bow that I want. And I'm getting it. It's like, but don't ask me, God, if I should do something else with this money. Or whatever. You put in place what you want. I've got this and I've got to get it because I need it. God, please don't ask me to do something different with this money. All that reveals is that my money has become my God. You know, if God asked me to do something, it should just be, here you go. It's yours anyway. What do you want me to do? You know, there's not very many blessings on this planet like being blessed by God and being able to bless and help somebody in return. And so I'm praying for that for myself here. God, open my eyes to somebody in my world who can take my 30 bucks that I put down, picked up, put down, picked up, put down, picked up, where it could really maybe help them understand who you are, the Christmas story, a little bit better. Maybe they'll see that there is a God who loves them. Maybe it'll just start by seeing that there are people in this world who aren't as bad as the news and the media would like to portray us as. Sometimes we demonstrate whom we're serving in our ways of spending. Jesus says, listen, you'll only serve one or the other. That's some pretty strong words there. It's not, hey, you should serve one or the other. What he says is, you will. Right? I believe it actually says, you cannot serve. You cannot serve both God and money. And so ultimately, every one of us will just kind of bow our face, lay ourselves at the feet of either God or the things of this world. So to maybe bring some clarity to this for you here, I want you to think of it this way. Let's say that we had the opportunity this morning to scoop up in our arms the things that we believe would transform life. If you could scoop up enough money that you could not spend in 100 lifetimes, would you scoop it up? Would you be willing to walk out of here with that today? Or if there was another pile and you could scoop up out of that, and this is, I can only know Jesus as much as what's in this pile. I can only know God as much as I'm willing to know Him from understanding what's in this pile. Like, which pile would I run to? Which one would I just scoop up and say, man, everything that I hold in my arms is what matters. This is what I really treasure. This is what really is valuable to me. Listen, you don't have to answer that to me, but if you'd run to the money pile and just swim in it, then I would say that begins to reveal that maybe money is more of our God than our God is. I know we're sitting in a church building and you're listening to a pastor talk about God's word, and so the Christian answer is, more of Jesus, please. But maybe when you look at yourself within, you'd go, man, I just have a hard time there. I'd really like to swim in an amount of money that I could not spend in 100 lifetimes. For me, I really want to swim more and more to get to know God better. I want to know Jesus better. I want to understand His Word better, and I want to live in the fullness of Him and be just driven by, compelled by His love, and just directed and empowered by His Spirit. That's the well, that's the arms, that's the pool that I just want to take everything out of. How we use money, how we spend money, demonstrates whom we're serving. So Christmas can change the world. And I know if we had time to talk this morning, you could share how it has changed your world. I don't mean decorations, I don't mean lights, wreaths, candy canes, Santa Claus. We're talking about the coming of Jesus. When Jesus came to you, He's changed you. You're not who you once were, and you're becoming more like Him. And so am I. We're in this battle, we're in this struggle of constantly battling flesh, and sometimes the flesh that wants to rule and win in us has to deal with this area of money, what we're spending. So if I try to just spend on myself or to spend my way into happiness, try to spend my way into meaning, try to spend my way into really having joy, I'm always going to be left empty or unsatisfied, or it's just going to be this continual having to just lay it down over and over again. And that won't take very long for me, and it won't take very long for you before we lay it down and it's all empty and we got nothing. And why didn't it satisfy? Why didn't it bring joy? Why didn't it complete me? Because it has no power to do so. Christmas is still changing the world, and for it to be used through us to change others, it's got to be changing my world. And so it's a call back here today to think about what we treasure the most. And so I pray here, I pray your life will be wrecked like mine was yesterday. When you're checking out somewhere, when you're picking up something, when you're thinking about a child or a grandchild or a spouse, let's start thinking about, am I really investing something in them that's going to last them forever? Or is this just a trinket or a toy or something that's just frivolous and ultimately it doesn't mean anything to them? I'm not saying we can't have some of both, but let's don't sacrifice the meta-narrative for this little bitty story of this will really make you happy. This is really what you need. Maybe you looked at yourself today and you'd say, my health, spiritually speaking, is just not that great. My eyes are kind of double right now. I've got my God box and I've got my other thing boxes, and it's just like I'm struggling letting these two blend and mesh, and it's really a battle for me. Good. Battle. Struggle. Persevere. Pray. Just stay in that fight. Or maybe you look at what's in your hands and you'd say, no, it's mine, Corey, and I get to determine how I'm going to spend it. Friend to friend, I'd say you're wrong. And you're way wrong. We have a God who's blessed us. He owns it all. We're just temporary stewards. And so God, will you use what's in my hands to bring you glory and honor? For me, this is a perfect kind of message for this time of year. Advent conspiracy, conspiring together, rebelling against a cultural narrative that says your happiness, your joy, life, meaning, and purpose is found in the stuff that you acquire, in the traditions, the music, and the food. My joy doesn't reside there. Right? My joy resides in the one that we've sung about today. Oh, come, Emmanuel, we've sung. God with us. Aren't you thankful for that this morning? God is with us.